From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in January 1992 when Sandra Frankel became the supervisor of the town of Brighton. This Florida native, this former speech pathologist and school board leader, would hold the position of Brighton Town Supervisor for 20 years. Now, during that time, she would run for New York State Lieutenant Governor, and she made her first run for Monroe County Executive in 2011. She was soundly defeated by incumbent Maggie Brooks by 14 points. And so it seemed that perhaps Sandy Frankel's career in public service was over with that 2011 loss. But here we are, with Frankel again, the Democrats' choice to run for County Executive. Brooks' term limited out. The Republicans will support current County Clerk Cheryl Donolfo. Can Sandy Frankel win? Well, between now and the elections, we aim to have the candidates on for several discussions here on Connections. And we start with my guest for this hour, Sandra Frankel, former Brighton Town Supervisor, Democratic candidate for County Executive of Monroe County. Nice to have you in studio.
It's great to be here, Evan.
Well, I'm going to start with just the fact that we look around the landscape, Republicans have 18 seats in the county legislature. No Democrat has held the county executive seat since Tom Fry, of course. Even the district attorney, Sandra Dorley, changed parties from Democrat to Republican. It is not clear to me if there is a Democratic or will be a Democratic candidate for district attorney. Is the party strong enough to even win this race? Is there a chance for you to win this?
Absolutely. First of all, we know for a fact that the majority of voters in Monroe County want to see the county move in a new direction. We've had a legacy of scandals, of corruption, of waste of public dollars, tax dollars, and we've also seen the county slide into fiscal stress, one of the worst in the state. The bond rating was just downgraded to Baa1 from A3, and all of the indicators point to a problem going forward unless there is real change. And that's something that I can bring to this race. In addition, the number of Democratic registered voters exceeds the number of Republican registered voters, and there's a large block of independent voters. So the challenge will be getting the vote out in November. If we can do that, and I believe we can, then absolutely we can win this race.
4 years ago, you said you could win, and you lost by 14 points. What was the difference then? What did you learn?
One of the things that I learned was that we're going to do things differently this time, and one area of difference is an emphasis on social media. People are using television, radio, newspapers, but they also get much of their information now from a diverse variety of sources. So we have a great new website. I'm on Facebook constantly, on Twitter, and I'm even learning Tumblr. So we're out there on all fronts. And in addition, I'm in the community. I'm out there meeting with people on a regular basis, attending community events, meetings, and talking with the people who live here to hear what is on their minds, what their concerns are, really listening. And being in the community, walking door to door, all of that will build the base for a successful campaign. And already there's great excitement and momentum in the community about my race. So I'm excited about this opportunity. Times are different. Things have gotten worse in the county. Poverty is at an all-time high here in Monroe County for families, for children. The problems have simply exploded. And when you look at the deficits facing county government and you look at my experience versus my opponent, you can see that I bring to the table the kind of success, a record of success and experience as the CEO, the elected executive of a municipal government, who was responsible for all phases of a broad-based government. And my opponent has been in a ministerial position with a far smaller budget and much narrower responsibilities, really collecting fees and issuing permits and managing the records of the county. That's a very different kind of experience. And in addition, I have a very strong commitment to ethics and integrity. And when you look at the kinds of problems that the county has had, where my opponent has been in lockstep with the current administration for 12 years, I believe that having someone new, a change, will help to clean out the underlying issues and challenges related to excuse me, I have allergies, so pardon my voice.
No problem. I understand. I do too.
Yeah, but related to establishing a high level of ethics and honesty and integrity in government. We've got to do that in order to turn around voter apathy and restore faith in government that's supposed to be of the people, by the people, and for the people, not for a small group of inner circle politicians and their friends who benefit from leases on buildings that are not particularly heavily used, a building that the county owned and sold and then leased back. I mean, there are actions that the county has taken that we have to look at differently. The LDCs are problems that that the Democrats have argued for years, myself included, need reform, need better oversight, need to be transparent. My style of government is open, transparent government, and I want the public to know everything that's going on. It's their right, it's their government. So on many fronts, we need to have a new direction, we need change so that we can clean house and make this county the great place it was and can be again. You know, we've got fabulous resources, wonderful assets, arts and culture, natural resources, an abundance of fresh water that so many places in this country and around the world would envy.
You're not going to do like a whole stump speech here, are you?
No, but these are all things that I feel passionate about because I really want to make the quality of life better for everyone in this county. Poverty isn't just in the city. It's in the suburbs as well. So we've got a lot of work to do, and keeping the same administrative focus isn't going to make that change happen.
Okay, so you've given us a lot to kind of work with and sort through there. And for a reminder for our listeners, we're talking to Sandra Frankel, who is the former Brighton Town Supervisor, the Democratic candidate for Monroe County Executive. She's running against Republican County Clerk Cheryl DeNolfo. And Maggie Brooks, the three-term County Executive, is term limited out. So we've got an election on our hands for the fall. We have reached out to the Republicans, actually been doing that for a while, and had a good chance to talk to hear from Bill Reilich, the Republican Party chair, a while back. And he said, you know, after Republicans really make it official with Cheryl, they're going to have her on this program. That just happened a couple of weeks ago. So we expect to have Cheryl DeNolfo on very, very soon. And I look forward to that. And she'll be in here separately for her own hour of conversation. But today it's Sandy Frankel. If you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Now, you just said that you think Cheryl DeNolfo is in lockstep with the Brooks administration on all the areas you just criticized them for. But on the day that Cheryl DeNolfo announced her candidacy, she said she would essentially reverse the policy on LDCs. In other words, it sounds like she agrees with you. And this is a bit of alphabet soup, and for some of our listeners who might forget, it's technical, it's complex, but it is important. And Cheryl DeNolfo said no LDCs. You say no LDCs. You might not disagree on that, Sandy.
Well, the fact of the matter is that LDCs have been operating in a closed way. There are indictments. A trial is coming up in February over bid rigging and other issues. And over the course of 20 years, she has not ever, to my knowledge, spoken out about any of the scandals, any of the problems of the county during her time in elective office. And only now that she's running, she raises those issues, which the Democrats and I have brought up time and again, because we know there's a critical need for change. The LDCs have contracts in place. They have accrued significant multi-millions of dollars in debt. So to say that you're going to eliminate the LDCs raises the question of where that debt would then reside and how would that be managed. So it's a little bit glib to say you're going to eliminate LDCs. And as an attorney, she certainly must understand the issues related to breaking contracts and making the kinds of changes that would be required. I think we have seen around this state that there are some LDCs that do good and operate well. And so I think our first approach ought to be to make sure that those that are in place are truly open and transparent and are operating under the same laws and requirements that government has to operate under in terms of competitive bidding and other operational requirements. And at the same time, I would not support creating new LDCs. I think there are just too many problems associated with it. And many of these functions are functions that government had had before and are appropriate for government to continue.
Okay. Talking to Sandy Frankel, and you've got registration advantage. You have, in your anecdotal experience, an enthusiasm, maybe an enthusiasm advantage that you think you can energize Democrats. But every time I talk to people privately, they worry that right now in our area, the Democratic Party is splintered, that there are factions. So let me ask you this first and foremost. If you win, you're going to have Democrats in the city of Rochester support you. Has the mayor of Rochester, Lovely Warren, has she endorsed you?
We aren't at that point yet. We have had conversations, and I know that we have a good working relationship. I also have the clear support of Democrats in the city from both camps, if you will. They've been working on my campaign, helping me. And so I have been able to bring Democrats together for this campaign.
Is the party divided internally right now?
There are a few divisions among a few people, but I don't believe that that is the pervasive condition of the party. And I think healing has gone on and will continue in certain quarters. But basically, I've got support across the board. And so I believe we're going to be in great shape.
Do you think the mayor of Rochester will endorse you?
I certainly hope so. I can't speak for her, but I certainly would hope that would be the case. And I'm optimistic about that.
Would you be disappointed as a Democrat if she did not?
I think that we need to work together in partnership. And whether there's a formal endorsement or a tacit level of support, the real issue is, are we going to be able to make change for people in this community? Are we going to be able to address poverty? Are we going to be able to restore funding for childcare that the county cut? And we know that preschool experiences position kids to have success in school and will help, I believe, as research also supports, to stem the school to prison pipeline, funding for nurses to help teen mothers who need to learn how to parent and to nurture and nourish their kids to get them ready for preschool for a healthy, successful life. Looking at public safety issues and the partnership between the police and the people they serve. That's moving in a more positive direction, but there's still work to be done on both sides. So I am very confident that the mayor and I share common goals for the city, just as I see those needs in the suburbs. Economic development, jobs, job creation, that's something that is bottom line of importance to everyone in this county. And at the same time, there are businesses that have jobs that are going wanting for lack of people who have the training to do that work. And so taking the resources of our higher education system, of MCC, of BOCES, and getting those kinds of programs connected with the people who have jobs but without the skilled workers, getting the people trained to do those jobs is also an important element. So when you look at where we're at with regard to the city and the county, the highest percentage increase of poverty is now happening in the suburbs. It's not just a city problem. And while it's more, it's distributed over a larger area, larger population, it's still increasing. And so we need to look at what we can do as a community, one county, one community coming together in common cause to create jobs, to keep our young people here. My kids all moved out of the area. And as I talk to youth today, kids in high school, students at our colleges and universities, they'd like to stay here, but they need the jobs. And that's going to be something that we have to focus on, too.
Okay. Last year in politics in New York State, we had a good chance to see talk versus reality when Governor Cuomo last spring was endorsed by the Working Families Party. He made some promises to them. And they said, well, hey, we may not agree on everything, but we can get along, et cetera, et cetera. You talk to the Working Families Party today. The governor has backtracked or essentially ignored a lot of what he said he wanted to do with them, and that has just not worked out. So I wonder if the parallel in Monroe County is, are we going to see Democrats rally together? I think this will be the sort of prove-it kind of election, don't you think? Whereas the Democrats will either rally together or they won't. And the mayor of Rochester is a powerful person. She has a strong base of support. And on this program, she said that she needs to be able to work with people no matter their party, no matter their position, that she has worked well with Maggie Brooks, that no matter who the next county executive is, she wants to be able to work with them, and that she hadn't fully thought out an endorsement yet. But could she endorse Cheryl DeNolfo?
As the Democratic mayor of the city of Rochester, I would find that hard to believe. But what I can tell you is that I share her view of the importance of working together collaboratively with people regardless of their political party affiliation. As supervisor of the town of Brighton, I hired the best people for the job because of their professionalism, their commitment to public service, their record of accomplishment in other areas, and because they shared the vision with me of for the community's improvement. And so my finance director, whom I directly hired, was a Republican. So was my secretary. Many of the people on our staff, the department heads, were of diverse political party persuasions, probably fewer Democrats than Republicans, in fact. But we worked together as a team to do things like fixing a major inherited financial mess, turning the finances of the town around, and earning a high-level Moody's credit rating upgrade to AA2. And cutting taxes 5 times, eliminating redundant positions, doing all of the, I rolled my salary back 2 years worth and eliminated the town car. From small things to big things, we made the town financially strong once again. And it was at risk of having a credit rating upgrade when we walked in the door at the beginning of 1992. And by strengthening the finances of the town, we were then able to go on and do the things that the people in the community wanted and actually voted to have done, like creating a townwide park system, a new library, fixing long-neglected infrastructure, and putting in place community policing that really made a difference in the town. And in addition, addressing serious environmental concerns so that the town was stronger, property values held during the most difficult real estate market times in the country and in the county, and increased in value. And so we have a place where we have excellent education, where people want to live. And that's something that I want to see countywide. So I share the mayor's view that you can work across the aisle to make good things happen. I've done it. I will do it as county executive.
How well do you know your opponent, Cheryl DeNolfo? How many times have you met her?
I've met her in various settings over time, but not in any serious way. It's really been more of a greeting type of, mm-hmm. of relationship. And she's, you know, she's worked with the town clerk in Brighton, and they had a good working relationship. So, you know, my knowledge of her is that she's a nice person and that she's doing a nice job as county clerk.
Okay. Let me get our first phone call in. Sandra Frankel is my guest for the hour. She's the Democrats candidate for Monroe County Executive. This is Frank in the city of Rochester. Go ahead, Frank.
Yes, I have a question. And under Sandy's leadership in Brighton has a very strong leadership position on environmental actions. Monroe County, under the Republican Party, has shown an appalling lack of leadership on adapting to and mitigating climate change. How will that change under your administration?
Well, as you know, I am dedicated to ensuring a healthy, safe environment in our community and beyond. And I would put in place programs that would address the carbon footprint to reduce that to the greatest extent we could. I created in Brighton the Green Brighton Task Force, which had broad-based representation from across the community with experts in environmental science as well as stakeholders in the community to put together a plan of action, which we then implemented. And as a result, we've been reducing the carbon footprint and also addressing issues like water quality and open space preservation, the importance of trees. There are so many ways that the county can do more to address climate change. Looking at alternative fuel vehicles, they have done some. My husband actually and I just bought a Volt about a year ago, which is an electric car that also has a little bit of gasoline. We love it. Well, you know, I'd like to see more vehicles using alternative energy that will help in that regard. And we also need to look at and work in partnership with the regional transportation entities, because when you look at transportation, we need to encourage people to use transit, to bicycle, alternative modes of transportation for commuting as well as for recreation.
Next call is Molly in Rochester. Go ahead, Molly.
Hi, I'm a big fan of Sandy Frankel's, I should tell you first off, and I would like to know how can you put forth the advantages to the entire county for the well-being of the city. The amount of poverty in the city, although I heard you say that poverty is growing in the county, and I agree and I know that to be a fact, but I think the city is in serious need of major attention. And I would like to know, I would like to encourage you to explain to the county the advantages to the entire county for if the city improves and there are fewer people in poverty and the whole well-being of the county will improve as the well-being of the city improves.
But Molly, don't you think that the current administration and that Cheryl Donolfo would agree that a strong city with less poverty is good for everybody?
Yeah, I'm sure in general terms that's probably the case. But I guess my belief is that Sandy has the experience of running a town and knows a lot of the technicalities and ins and outs of governing and is in a really good position to do something about it.
Molly, thanks for the phone call. Go ahead, Sandy.
There's no question. The city is at the heart of our county. If the city fails, so will our suburbs, so will our region. So we need a strong city to have a strong region. And so to the extent that we work on reducing, eliminating poverty, that's going to be to the advantage of everyone, because if people have jobs, if a mother who is a low-income mother and relies on child care in order to keep her job, it's money well spent. There's a 7-to-1 ratio in terms of the cost of child care services versus the cost of dropouts and incarceration at the other end of the school of someone's school life and into adulthood. So we need to be smart about how we spend money and look at the priorities and have a long-term outlook, not just what's going to feel good this year with this particular budget, but how are we going to impact the city and the county to be the best that it can be. So I absolutely agree with you that we're all in this together, and we have to have that mindset. I see people coming together now. The Anti-Poverty Initiative is a start. The Unite Project. There are a number of initiatives that have brought people from across the county and from the city together to look at and work on poverty. There are no simple solutions, but there are actions that we can take that will make a difference, and I'm committed to doing that.
Child care funding, would you increase it at the county level? And if so, how would you pay for it?
I would do that, and I would do that by eliminating waste. We know that there are costs that are unnecessary. As I said earlier, one example is the leasing of buildings that are not utilized in any significant way. Why are those leases continuing to be on the books? And why are those leases continuing? We need to get in there and prioritize what is really going to make a positive difference, increase the tax base, because we have people working in good jobs, earning a good living, and then spending what they earn to support businesses in this community. It's all interrelated. And so we've got to have both the view from above and the view on the ground. We've got to dig in and get that plan of action finalized. And then we've also have to have the political will to implement it. And that's where the challenge will be, the political will.
Sandra Frankel is my guest for the hour. She's running for county executive of Monroe County, and she's taking some of your phone calls. We're going to get a short break in. We're going to come back and more of your phone calls, and we're going to dig into where the state of taxes really is in this county and where it ought to go next. Everyone says they want to cut taxes, but if we're looking at credit ratings and we're looking at balancing the books and we're looking at a long-term solution, what would Sandra Frankel do as county executive of this county? That is next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about school discipline. Is zero tolerance necessary to impose structure on students' lives who might not get much structure at home? Or does zero tolerance lead to the so-called school-to-prison pipeline? Are severe punishments leading to suspensions and expulsions that put kids on a bad path in life? Join the conversation next hour on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from City Blue Imaging, a commercial printer based in downtown Rochester for more than 85 years, specializing in digital color printing, trade show, and special event printing. CityBlueImaging.com.
Welcome back to Connections. Gary in Greece writes to us, what would Sandy Frankel do about hidden taxes, such as the snowplow fee? And I want to explain what I think Gary means by that, because this goes back to what journalist David K. Johnston, I think a Brighton resident, by the way, Sandy,
yes,
isn't that right, has often said, too often journalists report on people say and not what they do. So in this county, we've been talking about the tax rate for a long time and talking about ostensible steady tax rates. But what has happened is some of the things that used to be included in the county tax rate have now been separated out and sort of prorated for municipalities. So snowplow fee used to be included in the county tax rate. Now it is not. You will see it itemized, if I understand that correctly. There's an MCC chargeback that I think is prorated based on, you know, how much each municipality sends students to MCC. So if Greece sends 100 kids to MCC, Pittsford sends 50. If you live in Greece, you pay more in your county tax bill for MCC, as an example. Those are all things that used to be part of just the tax rate. Now they've been separated out, and so the county has been able to hold the tax rate the same. Is it $8.99? Is it still $8.99 per thousand?
Well, Paul Haney tells me that it's really $9.22, not $8.99.
Okay, but it's listed as $8.99. It's, yes, been steady, and these separated out items are the way that they have essentially raised taxes, or we are paying more. Just as a citizen, hey, I'm a taxpayer. I'm paying more than I did 10 years ago in this way. Now, the tax rate on my bill says the same thing. I'm now paying more. But this is a complex question. Maybe it makes sense to do it this way. Would you change any of the chargebacks, for example? Would you keep snowplow removal as a separate charge? Would you keep MCC chargeback as a separate itemized charge? Would you roll that back into the tax rate? What would you do?
First of all, I made a commitment to keep the tax rate flat. And that's something that's important because Monroe County is one of the highest taxing areas in the country. Property taxes are really difficult for many people. But at the same time, being honest about what the taxes are is critically important. So as you point out, the chargebacks, the fees for snow plowing, those are things that we need to look at. I am not a supporter of the approach that this administration took to allocate the cost of MCC based on the number of students from a given municipality. What that does is it shifts the burden, frankly, to the places where the burden is more difficult. The city and some of the smaller suburbs in Greece on the west side have perhaps lower income families than people in Pittsford, Penfield, Perrington, or Brighton, for that matter, although Brighton does send a lot of kids to MCC. And the value of a community college, the value of any of our education systems is really something that inures to all of us. If we have well-educated students in our community coming out and being prepared for the workforce and to be productive citizens, then we are all better off for that. MCC is a community college. It's not a college just for the number of students who happen to go in a given year from Greece versus the number of students who go in a given year from Pittsford. That ought to be based on all of us contributing in an equitable way. And that means not based on the number of students from your town or from the city, but based on assessed value.
All right, so I understand that part. So you change the formula for how we charge back on MCC.
Yes.
Would you roll it back into the tax rate or would you keep it separate?
I think you can keep it as a chargeback, but if it's done on an assessed value basis, it is basically like a tax. But it is a chargeback that is separated out. And it's not a bad thing for people to know how their taxes are being used so that if they can see what MCC costs, if they can see what highway maintenance costs, we all drive on the roads throughout the county. Chargebacks can be an effective way of educating people about the specific costs of,
sure,
a particular function.
Sure, so, snowplow removal, maintenance, et cetera. But if you are county executive, 2 years from now, if the tax rate is the same, but I am paying more for snowplow removal, I am not going to let you come into the studio and tell me that you didn't raise taxes because it wouldn't be true.
I'm going to tell you what your taxes are going to be. I'm going to tell you what the tax rate is. I'm going to tell you what the chargebacks are. I'm going to
the fees.
I'm going to tell you what all of that is, what the cost of county government is. Honesty, openness. To me, that's a bottom line requirement for government that is there to serve the people. So if the services and programs are important to the community and the public has made a commitment to pay for those essential services, they need to know what and how those services are costing and how they're being paid for. So I think it's an issue in part of openness. There's no question that over the years, the taxes have gone up. We now have a property tax cap that that all local governments have to abide by in this state. And that's another aspect of how we report out and inform people about taxes. A lot of people pay their property tax bill through escrow, so they don't even sometimes see or attend to the specifics of it. And I think we need to change that.
Todd writes to us on Twitter, "The county executive has control of maybe 20% of the budget, right? All of these ballooning costs are mandated, yes or no?"
Well, you know, there are a lot of mandated costs associated with Medicaid, with certain costs from the Department of Social Services. And part of that is accurate, but some of the items that are included in mandates are county imposed mandates as well. And so I do believe that we need to work with Albany to help counties offset the cost of some of these mandates. I think that's reasonable and fair. Most states cover the full cost, for example, of Medicaid and don't require the counties to pay for that. That's not what New York State does. And so that's a very reasonable and appropriate avenue to pursue. But it's not the only solution. We have to look within the budget that we have here and become more efficient, have a more cost-effective and better functioning operations. The Department of Social Services, from what I've heard from citizens who use that particular function of county government, talk about how it's really not easy to navigate, that that it's not a one-stop shopping kind of a place, and that getting help is that they need. And, you know, during the recession, many people from across the county who had been in white-collar jobs needed to go to the county for help just as much as people who were in lower-income jobs needed that help. And so there are some real changes and efficiencies that I believe can make a difference in how much we spend, where we advocate for relief. There are programs. The state comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, has identified a particular program where counties can request from the state a look at how they're functioning financially. And if their application is accepted, they can get guidance on ways to improve, as well as up to a $5 million grant to help with this effort. And so there are things that we can do working with the state government, but also advocating for the state to take on its true responsibility for some of the mandates.
All right. So before I turn it over to our callers for the rest of the hour with Sandra Frankel, the Democratic candidate for Monroe County Executive this year, a couple more points on that. I think I hear what you're saying to Todd is that, yes, there are mandates and maybe a lot of mandates, but it sounds like what you're saying is that there's a little more flexibility than what the current administration is saying. In other words, are they exaggerating just how constrained it is?
I believe there's a bit of exaggeration there. It's not all the states doing. There is responsibility locally as well.
Okay. And when it comes to why you want this job, I've talked to so many people who say, we haven't seen a long-term budget solution. You are inheriting a situation that could be dire within a few years. I don't know if we're looking at what's happened in Buffalo and Erie County and control boards and whatnot, and hopefully we never get there. But you're saying you're not going to raise taxes. You've established that the fees and the chargebacks really should be considered taxes, so we can assume they won't go up. If those are true, I don't know how you evaluate this and figure out a way to fix the finances in a permanent way without one shots. We've seen sales of assets and cigarette money and all kinds of different things over the years as one shots. But what is a permanent solution? Do you have a plan?
When I became supervisor of the town of Brighton, I walked into a situation, certainly on a smaller scale, but not unlike what the county is facing. I sat down with my finance director, with colleagues on the town board. I created a budget review task force with experts in finance, in organizational management, from across the board, put together a team to develop an approach that would help us out of this serious current budget deficit, as well as a structural budget deficit, because my predecessors had used the one shot of ice storm FEMA revenue for ongoing operating expenses that created the structural budget deficit, as well as having spent down the fund balance to almost nothing, which really put the credit rating in jeopardy. So we cut redundant positions. We froze spending. We put in place efficiencies. We made the operation as tight and as streamlined as possible. And I also negotiated with our unions to take a freeze on spending in that first year, with the commitment, which we fulfilled, to make them whole when we were in a better financial condition. And as a result of all of the steps that we took, and we did have a property tax increase in that first budget year, perhaps something on the lines of $20 a month. But that helped us restore the fund balance. It helped us put in place a balanced budget for the current year and to close the structural budget deficit. And once we did that, we were able to cut taxes five times.
But you had to raise taxes first.
First. And I will tell you
would
that
you do that here?
My intent is not to raise the property tax rate, because I believe that there are there's a tremendous amount of waste in this government because of actions that relate to mismanagement, and the state comptroller's office has looked at that and talked about mismanagement. So there are real opportunities to cut costs, and that's something that I'm confident we're going to be able to do. Obviously, you won't know everything until you're in there and looking in you know, finite detail at what the county is spending its money on, how it's spending its money. But I know there'll be savings and we'll be able to address that. This problem has been created over roughly a 24-year period, from Jack Doyle's freezing the tax levy to Maggie Brooks's freezing the tax rate. And so it's going to take time to undo this, but it is doable, and it's critical to have not only a capital budget and an operating budget, but a long-term financial plan that will help move us into a healthy financial condition.
But what you seem to be saying is you had the experience in Brighton of coming in. The first thing you did was raise taxes to stabilize, to create this sort of stability, that you worked with that over 10 different terms over 20 years. And from there, you were able to cut taxes five times. But the first thing you had to do was to raise taxes. You are taking that tool out of your toolkit as a candidate for county executive, and you're telling the voters, we don't know everything, but you're sure there's going to be savings. I mean, that's not very specific.
It is a situation that is massive, and we need to be able to identify specific cost savings in every department. We need to be able to identify which contracts are really not serving the public well. We need to be able to have a better approach to bidding. the development of specifications for things that the county is going to purchase, and make sure that they're done in a very proper and legal way. And when you do that, you are then able to cut costs. I mean, we you know, one small thing, and this is very small, but we looked at the turnover in police vehicles. How long do they keep the cars? And we upped the mileage before turning the cars over. We saved a lot of money that way. There are all kinds of intra-governmental savings that I believe can happen in addition to some of the external commitments that the county has made. So I am confident that we're going to be able to do that. It won't be easy. I have no illusions about that, but I am absolutely confident. And with the community pulling together to right this ship so that we can have real stability going forward. And it's not the stable outlook of Moody's credit rating report that just came out, because that stable statement really relates to maintaining the current credit rating for the near future. I know that we're going to be able to do this, and we'll have experts helping us.
All right, a couple quick phone calls. This is Robert in Fairport. Let's try to keep it moving as fast as we can. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, just a couple things at the outset here. A false statement was said about the bond rating for the county kind of going down. The Moody's did actually improve the rating to stable, so I just want to correct that. But the other thing here, too, is the tax rate. We keep hearing from the county that the tax rate is stable, the tax rate is stable. You know, my property tax bills have gone up consistently over the last decade, even though we have the stability. And really what's happening here is that you've got the reason taxes are going up is that the county has farmed out the increases to town assessors that continue to raise the assessments for properties, and that's why taxes are going up. I kind of would like to hear what Mrs. Frankel's opinion is on that. It's like a shadow technique.
Okay, first let me...
Thank you, Robert.
Yeah, first let me say that the Moody's credit rating report that just came out actually did downgrade the county's credit rating. It went from A3 down to Baa1. That's a real drop in the credit rating, and that means that when the county goes out to borrow money, it's going to cost more for interest charges. The change from negative to stable relates to the county's having said that it has $9 million in surplus, but the county hasn't yet paid the $21 million that it owes for the pension costs. And if it paid that, then there would be a deficit, not a $9 million surplus. So when Moody's looks at this and says, okay, there's a $9 million fund in surplus, that's before this bill has been paid.
In regards to his comment about assessments, et cetera?
Okay. Assessments are supposed to be fair and equitable. People are supposed to pay taxes based on the value of the property that is full market value. So if you have a municipality that has not done a revaluation in many years, which was the case in Brighton, for example, where it was at 6% of full market value when we took office, and it is now at full market value. Many municipalities around the county have done revaluations to bring everybody up to full market value. And that means that some properties over the length of time between those updates, some properties will see their values go up, some will see their values go down, some will not change. And so you have to look at the individual municipality and the values. But the idea behind all of this is that everybody is paying their fair share based on full market value, not getting the advantage of an old value that may no longer reflect what a house would sell for in today's market.
Bill in Spencerport wants to know if you're for or against term limits.
Theoretically, I am against term limits.
You had 10 terms as Brighton supervisor.
I did. I'm against term limits because I believe in the principle of democracy that the voters have the absolute control over term limits. If you don't like what somebody's doing, vote them out of office. And if you like what they're doing and you want to see what the progress that's been made continue, then reelect that person. You know, in this country, we have we often see a mindset where people say, you know, Congress is horrible. Look at what they're doing or not doing. But I love my elected official. And the same for county government or town government. Wherever you look, people have a connection to the people they elect. But it's up to the voters to do that.
All right. Online, where can people find your website, Sandy Frankel?
My website is www.sandyfrankel2015.com. And you can also find me on Facebook, on Twitter, and not quite yet, but probably very soon on Tumblr. I'm on Tumblr, but I haven't figured out how to use that yet.
She's running for county executive as a Democrat. Cheryl Donolfo, her opponent, is going to be on this program soon. We look forward to that conversation as well. And I hope that we continue these conversations as we go towards the election. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
All right, short break. We're talking about the school-to-prison pipeline next hour. Stay with us.